So as we begin the Parsha cycle over again, beginning with Parsha Bereshit, which we did 3 weeks ago, we are introduced literally to a blank canvas, although not white but black, where there was complete darkness. In Bereshit 1:2, it says, "The earth was unformed and void. Darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God hovered over the surface of the water." Thus, literally everything from this point on is to be revealed to us, the reader, in that we were not there at the time, so we are experiencing a retelling of all the events that have transpired up to the point of where we are today. So keeping in mind that what we do read is not an exhaustive recount of history, but a condensed presentation of the facts that are essential to Adonai, for it is his narrative and thus his presentation. He will emphasize that which he deems necessary. His creation is ultimately known. Whether we understand it is a whole other issue. So basically, God's revealing things to us. We have an ability to understand what's said. The question is, are we understanding it correctly? Secondly, how Adonai reveals his narrative is not always apparent. As we have studied last year using thematic analysis, what appears to be random isn't. What appears to be irrelevant isn't. There is not one wasted yod or stroke in God's word. There is neither a randomness nor an irrelevancy within Adonai's narrative. Each word is intentionally conveyed, while events that seem to appear in random order are likewise intentionally placed where they are for a reason. Thus, the last two parsha cover an enormous amount of time, approximately 2,000 years from the point in Adonai's narrative where he conveyed, "Then God said, let there be light, and there was light." So from that point to the point that we're getting to is approximately 2,000 years. In my opinion, this is where time began and eternity was paused, only to resume when time concludes. How do we identify time? Time is a unit of measure whereby we can measure the distance between two events. Time exists between what I identify as eternity past and eternity future. Time is measured by equal parts of night and day, evening and morning. For Adonai, upon separating the dark from the light, established the measure of time that will be used for and throughout his narrative. God called the light day and the darkness night, so it was evening and morning one day. Here we have our measure of time. It's not a numerical measure, but it's based on events. Ultimately, when we see the moon and then we see the moon again, is a full day. So what is the purpose of this explanation I've shared with you? We've witnessed Adonai's narrative cover an enormous amount of time in a rather abbreviated amount of space, revealing that which is important to his overall narrative. We've been introduced to man, created as male and female, Adonai's creation, and the one by whom Adonai would interact with and through. We have been introduced to all of the other elements of what has been called creation. From there, we get a glimpse into the lives of Adonai's creation and their start in the garden, a pristine place, but then encounter the fall of Adonai's creation. This is where the heart of the story begins. Separated from Adonai via transgression, the struggles of man are documented, the struggles to provide for themselves outside of Adonai's sustaining garden. We read in Genesis 3:17, to Adam, he said, because you listened to what your wife said and ate from the tree that which I gave you the order, you are not to eat from it. The ground cursed on your account, you will work hard to eat from it as long as you live. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat field plants. You will eat bread by the sweat of your forehead till you return to the ground, for you were taken out of it, you are dust, and you will return to dust. We would assess this is the low point. Yet even though we are now required to work for our sustenance, Adonai in his mercy did not totally and with absolute authority completely cut us off from being able to sustain our lives. So we witness the struggles of man over 2,000 years with a recurring theme being presented by Adonai. And this theme can be found in two separate passages in Genesis. Adonai saw that the people on the earth were very wicked, that all the imaginings of their hearts were always of evil only. For Adonai regretted that he had made humankind on the earth. It grieved his heart. And then Genesis 11:4. Then they said, come, let's build ourselves a city with a tower that has its top reaching up into heaven so that we can make a name for ourselves and not be scattered all over the earth. I talked about this last week. Whereby the intention of Adonai's creation has veered away from him and towards his creation's own desires. To describe Adonai as being long-suffering is an understatement. 2,000 years of dealing with the impact of our transgression, that is many lifetimes of human pride being thrown in the face of Adonai, the Creator, cannot be easy. At one point, he regretted even creating us, for he was so grieved. Yet he would continue to persevere. Everything endured to come to this point. A point in his narrative whereby Adonai reveals to us the next stage, the lineage of Noah's son, Shem, and his descendant, Avram. Call this the line of righteousness. It is the path Adonai will now begin to focus on in greater detail. From this moment in time, moving forward, Adonai's narrative will focus on one individual named Avram and his descendants. We're introduced to Avram as the son of Terach, the husband of Sarai and the uncle of Lot in Genesis 11:27 through 29. It is with this introduction that Adonai's narrative will center on Avram when he tells him to leave his land, his father's house, to a land unknown to him. We read in Genesis 12:1, now Adonai said to Avram, get yourself out of your country, away from your kinsmen and away from your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. Sight unseen, Avram has no idea where Adonai will take him, but we will soon learn that Avram is obedient to Adonai's mitzvah, to his command, and thus responds. So Avram went, as Adonai had said to him, and Lot was with him. Avram was 75 years old when he left Haran. Avram took his wife Sarah, his brother's son Lot, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, as well as the people they had acquired in Haran. Then they set out for the land of Canaan and entered the land of Canaan. Yet we see Adonai's narrative switch in focus to a single individual through the establishment of a covenant, an agreement which brings about a relationship of commitment between God and his people. In this case, specifically between Adonai and Avram. We read in Genesis 12:2-3, I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you are to be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, but I will curse anyone who curses you. And by you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So unlike Adonai's previous covenants that were made with all of his creation, such as Adonai's promise never to execute judgment against his creation through the flooding of the earth, this was a promise made will ultimately impact all of his creation. So we go from a universal covenant to what we're going to see as a non-universal covenant. So here we are seeing Adonai make a covenant with a single individual that we will witness as Adonai's narrative continues to be a generational promise, a promise that extends to Avram's descendants. Adonai makes the following promise to him. I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you are to be a blessing. So what does this mean, that I will make of you a great nation? The Hebrew word here is gadol. It can mean mighty, high, noble, and proud. From Avram will come forth a goy gadol, a great nation. We will come to learn more about this nation as Adonai's narrative continues. We will learn that a goy gadol will not be perfect. Adonai could have chosen from one of the 70 nations that already existed, as referenced in Bereshit or Genesis 10, but chose to establish a new nation. This new nation will not be like any other nation that exists already, because we will come to learn what Adonai will do in establishing this nation as a goy gadol. This is seen in the second part of the covenant promise, where he says, I will bless you. Through the covenant Adonai makes with Avram and thus his descendants, we will witness the following: the provision of land. A specific piece of land will be given to Avram and his descendants to possess. Interestingly, it is already occupied, and thus the current inhabitants will need to be evicted. This in and of itself will be detailed as part of Adonai's narrative. The land promised will be revealed as being special and includes a place that will be called Beit El, which is Hebrew for house of God. Adonai could have randomly chosen any location, but we have learned that Adonai is not a random, by the seat of the pants, creator. Everything he does with intent, for there is a plan he is in the process of revealing. We are in the infancy of that plan as we come to know Avram in greater detail than we have come to know anyone else up to this point. Second, the promise of a more comprehensive covenant through Avram's descendants. Adonai is having established them as a goy gadol, a holy nation, has set forth to codify this nation with his ways, his mitzvot, his mishpatim, and his hukim, his commandments, his laws, and his rulings. No other nation on the face of the earth has been given Adonai's ways, and thus a relationship that is unlike any other that has been revealed. Again, this is not something random or randomly being done, but with intention. We read in Exodus 19, Moses went up to God, and Adonai called to him from the mountain. Here is what you are to say to the household of Yaakov. Who is Yaakov? Descendant of Avram. Tell the people of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you pay careful attention to what I say and keep my covenant, then you will be my own treasure from among all the peoples, for the earth is mine. And you will be a kingdom of Kohanim for me, a nation set apart. These are the words you are to speak to the people of Israel. So we're talking about a great nation that will be a kingdom of Kohanim, a kingdom of priests, a great nation that will be considered Adonai's own treasure, and a great nation that will have great responsibility. Remember, we're just at the infancy of what's being revealed here. We know because we've seen it all, but we're starting from a point as if we didn't. And then Adonai says, Adonai's name will be placed upon this nation. This is another blessing where we convey this every Shabbat at the end of service. Adonai said to Moses, speak to Aaron and his sons and tell them that this is how you are to bless the people of Israel. You are to say to them, may Adonai bless you and keep you. May Adonai's face shine upon you and show you favor. And may Adonai lift up his face toward you and give you shalom. Then it concludes this way. In this way, they are to put my name on the people of Israel so that I, the Lord, will bless them. This is how Adonai has blessed Avram and thus his descendants. His name is placed upon them. His name is intricately connected to the nation. And then he says to Avram, I will make your name great. The focus of Adonai's narrative centers around one nation, Israel, and all that will transpire, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The Tanakh, from this moment on, recounts Adonai's relationship with his own unique treasure, his firstborn. They will flourish and they will fall. It will even grieve Adonai as he was grieved previously. A nation that will become known to the entire world as the nation of Adonai, a nation whose name will continue to exist while they are exiled from the land they were to reside in. To this day, Avraham is known throughout the world as our father Abraham. A majority of the world's population draws a connection to him directly. The Jewish people as their biological father, as does Islam. While the Christian world identifies him as the father of faith, Adonai has certainly made his name great. And then finally it says, you are to be a blessing, and I am going to include the families of the earth will be blessed. I will bring these two together. Both of these promises are forward-looking. We will see the nation coming forth from Avraham, being a blessing based on what Adonai has already done through this tiny nation in population, yet great because of Adonai's promise. We will see Avraham become a blessing to the families of the earth through his descendants and what will be revealed as Adonai's plan that is brought forth, a covert operation that will become declassified in time and yet has been revealed in pieces. We read in Exodus 6, 6, and 7, therefore say to the people of Israel, I am Adonai. I will free you from the forced labor of the Egyptians, rescue you from their oppression, and redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am Adonai your God, who freed you from forced labor of the Egyptians. Exodus 15:11. Who is like you, Adonai, among the mighty? Who is like you, sublime in holiness, awesome in praises, working wonders? You reached out with your right hand, the earth swallowed them. In your love, you led the people you redeemed. In your strength, You guided them to your holy abode. Deuteronomy 4, 23 and 24. Watch out for yourselves so that you won't forget the covenant of Adonai your God, which he made with you, and make yourself a carved image, a representation of anything forbidden to you by Adonai your God. For Adonai your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. So we learn more of this relationship and this dynamic. Adonai has a passion and an intimacy for his people, for whom he chose. Deuteronomy 7, 7. Adonai didn't set his heart on you or choose you because you numbered more than any other people. On the contrary, you were the fewest of all peoples. Rather, it was because Adonai loved you and because he wanted to keep the oath which he had sworn to your ancestors, that Adonai brought you out with a strong hand and redeemed you from a life of slavery under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. From this you can know that Adonai your God is indeed God, the faithful God who keeps his covenant and extends grace to those who love him and observe his mitzvot to 1,000 generations. And it is because of this covenant relationship Adonai continued with his plan he had established. Over time, we will come to learn why Adonai was steadfast with this people, this tiny nation. Ultimately, his word is his bond. Even if we break the covenant, he remains faithful. For in Jeremiah 31, 35, it says, if these laws leave my presence, says Adonai, then the offspring of Israel will stop being a nation in my presence forever. Here we have a bond between what God is saying in relation to his word. If my word, if my laws leave, then Israel no longer exists. This is what Adonai says. If the sky above can be measured and the foundations of the earth be fathomed, then I will reject all the offspring of Israel for all that they have done, says Adonai. It is through his words that he established the nation of Israel, and therefore what he has established, only he has the authority to undo. Yet this will not be the case because Adonai's intention reaches far and wide. There is more to this narrative than just about the nation. In Isaiah 59, starting in verse 14, thus justice is repelled, righteousness stands apart at a distance, for truth stumbles in the public court, and unrightness cannot enter. Honesty is lacking, he who leaves evil becomes a target. Adonai saw it, and it displeased him that there was no justice. Though Adonai remains long-suffering towards a people that he established, he ultimately fulfills the final part of the promise to Abraham, whereby all the families of the earth will be blessed. It is the nation he has established that will bring forth a redeemer. Isaiah 59, verse 16. He saw that there was no one, was amazed that no one interceded. Therefore, his own arm brought him salvation, and his own righteousness sustained him. He put on righteousness as his breastplate, salvation as a helmet on his head. He clothed himself with garments of vengeance and wrapped himself in a mantle of zeal. He repays according to their deeds, fury to his foes, reprisal to his enemies. To the coastlands he will repay their due. In the west they will fear the name of Adonai, and likewise in the east his glory. For he will come like a pent-up stream, impelled by the spirit of Adonai. Then a redeemer will come to Zion, to those in Yaakov who turn from rebellion. So says Adonai, and as for me, says Adonai, this is my covenant with them, my spirit who rests on you, and the words which I put in your mouth will not depart from your mouth or from the mouth of your children, or from the mouth of your children's children now or ever, says Adonai. So this Redeemer that is to come out of Zion will not only redeem Adonai's own treasure, but also his creation. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only and unique Son, so that everyone who trusts in him may have eternal life instead of being utterly destroyed. For God did not send the Son into the world to judge the world, but rather so that through him the world might be saved. Those who trust in him are not judged. Those who do not trust have been judged already, in that they have not trusted in the one who is God's only and unique Son. The one who is a descendant of Abraham will not only redeem his people, but will redeem all creation. The selection of Abraham was in essence the covert operation of the gospel. In Deuteronomy 29:28, things which are hidden belong to Adonai, but the things that have been revealed belong to us and our children forever, so that we can observe all the words of his Torah. So God has revealed to us his plan of redemption, starting ultimately through Abraham, establishing a nation through him, and out of him coming a redeemer. Yet once this has been declassified, it has been made known to us. Romans 1:16, for I am not ashamed of the good news, since it is God's powerful means of bringing salvation to everyone who keeps on trusting, to the Jew especially, but equally to the Gentile. For in it is revealed how God makes people righteous in his sight. And from beginning to end, it is through trust, as the Tanakh puts it, but the person who is righteous will live his life by trust. The messenger of the good news has declassified Adonai's plan for Israel and for all of creation. Always remember the following lessons taught by Torah, and you will never go wrong. Faith leads to righteousness and justification, and obedience leads to life and blessing. Abraham demonstrated both. He was instrumental in Adonai's narrative, and as such, we are the recipients to the promise he made to Abraham. We have been blessed, for there is no greater blessing one can receive than to be redeemed from our transgression, and thus permitted not to live a long life, but permitted to live an eternal life. These two are foundational and required for the relationship you have with Adonai through Yeshua. And I go back to Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, not from this week, but from weeks past. I call on heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have presented you with life and death, the blessing and the curse. Therefore, choose life so that you will live, you and your descendants. Loving Adonai your God, paying attention to what he says, and clinging to him, for that is the purpose of your life. On this depends the length of time you will live in the land Adonai swore he would give you to your ancestors, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. But keeping in mind, it also depends on whether your life extends to eternity, because it is only through Yeshua. The ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate blessing that God promised to Abraham. So if everybody please rise.